We will call to order the Unified Development Ordinance Advisory Committee agenda for Thursday, August 31st at 7 p.m. It's actually 7:01 now. We do have Deb Horez, Dave Schultz, Dan Transier, myself present, as well as staff and our minute taker, Marlis. We are short one member, as he actually stepped down from the Plan Commission and is no longer on the committee either. So with that, we have a quorum. We do have some minutes from July 20th, 23. Does anybody have any comments on the minutes? No. Take those as presented. We do have a citizens' comments section, so real quick, is it possible for us to switch the lights?
Sure.
I'm sorry. They're just...
They're too bright.
Yeah. Apologize. But we do have a section for citizens' comments. If anybody has comments, if you want to step up, we'll take those. Anybody? All right. Hearing none, because we have no one online, it appears. All right. And then I'll turn it over to staff. Is that too dark? I'm just trying to get it so it's not blinding. Still trying to adjust our lighting in here. I think that works.
Is that better?
Yeah. Took off the spotlights. Thank you. All right. I'll turn it over to you, Christy. I believe you're taking this part.
Sure. So the introduction is just a brief summary of all the chapters. We've gone through a lot of work over these last 3 years. 15-odd meetings over that time. We didn't have any issues with Chapter 1, which dealt with the general provisions. Basically, it outlines the authority, the applicability, the intent, and the purpose of the UDO. The recommendation for the last meeting was the effective date of the UDO was agreed as January 1st, 2024. So there were no other comments or revisions made by staff or the consultant who's also here, Jackie Berg from House of Levine and Ruben Schnell from House of Levine. So if there's no issues on Chapter 1, we can move on to Chapter 2.
Any comments on Chapter 1? And if there are things that come up, we can go back to it, but we'll go through our outline that we have in here first.
And I don't know.
I hope this is better. You can hear me.
Chapter 2, specifically about definitions. So there's a complete list of definitions and terms referenced throughout the UDO. Most of them have stayed the same from the original document, but we did introduce more clarity into the definition. So, for example, there's a distinction between structure versus a building, enclosed auto sales versus outdoor auto sales. There's an addition of certain progressive land uses like data centers, refrigerated warehousing, battery storage use, just trying to get in front of these uses before they do come to the city. And then, just defining some more of the temporary uses in the agreement, in the development ordinance. So if there were no comments or updates in the chapter, you want to move on, or did you
want to
revisit some definitions?
Any thoughts on that one? Any comments? I mean, I do have one on definitions.
Sure.
This is one I've brought up a couple times, and would still like to see this reintroduced, but instead of using dwelling unit, the term family, I would like to have reintroduced and put back into the UDO as compared to having that pulled out. So that's something that I'd like consideration of as we go through this discussion. So we can go through it now, or we can have that as a point we come back to when we get into further discussion. So
staff would recommend that we kind of flesh it out now so that we know what the direction is from the committee. Or do we keep it as is and then let it go to the public hearing process and have City Council go through that.
Right, because it could just be a city council decision if the committee doesn't want to take it up.
Well, I'd say put family back in, leave the option for dwelling unit, and then if the council wants to make it dwelling unit as opposed to single family, then you address it as a body. So,
so keep it as family?
I'm okay with that.
Chris family, Dan family, Dave family. Deb?
Deb?
Whatever consensus is, I'm okay with. Let city council decide.
Thank you.
Okay, so for the next iteration of this, we will have family. Okay.
I have one.
Yes.
Is PUD included in the definitions?
No, it's later in chapter 8, I believe.
So we don't need it in definition?
No, it's defined in its own chapter, in chapter 8.
And then tract of land, is that in there?
Track of land.
Yeah, is it under parcel?
Instead of tract?
Yes, parcel and lot.
Did you come across by chance, Deb, a reference to tract? Or was it?
I think I did somewhere, and that's why I wrote it down. I don't remember where.
We will check.
For consistency purposes, yes.
We'll do a QA at the end and make sure that the definitions match up. So I will add, check for track of land.
Is there a difference between a unit and a dwelling unit?
In the, as it is now, no.
Okay, do we need to specify?
Well, you guys are recommending to go to family, so there's no need to define unit.
All right, that's all I have on definitions.
Thank you.
Chapter 3 deals with district standards, so it's basically establishing the district's purpose, bulk regulations, permitted and special uses, as well as permitted obstructions. So from the last committee meeting, we have had changes at the city council level. So per discussion at city council, staff was directed to keep the current bulk regulations for R1 and R2, R1 being 18,000 square feet, and R2 being 12,000 square feet. And the minimum lot size, all of that stays the same, and the removal of the proposed R2A zoning district. So those revisions have been made, all other revisions made as recommended by the advisory committee. And additionally, per the request from the economic development consultant, we've added salvage yards back as a special use in the M2 district.
I have a couple things to mention on the standards, but anybody else have any comments on standards first?
I do not.
Okay, so with the discussion from the city council, the R1, R2, R2A, I've since had some conversations with some of the aldermen. While, as you see in the memo, it says that staff was directed to keep the bulk regulations as they are. Some of the council members have mentioned that they are open to continuing the discussion on the readjustment. So when you take R1 and R2, so it would take the 18,000 to 12,000, the 12,000 to 10,000 to conform with the bulk of what our lots are. There was consensus to continue that discussion. So the other is the R2A. The R2A, there was a little more of a hardline discussion on that one, but maybe with some restrictions and caveats to that one, that discussion is being open. That is probably more suited as a council discussion in whether or not that will be added in. I know it was consensus here, so the recommendation could be to just keep it as the as what the committee had. So we could, from committee here, we can either just defer to the council completely or just say what we had on the prior version of the R1, R2, R2A is our recommendation. And then the EDC discusses it next week, and then the council discusses it subsequently. I think it would be beneficial for us to take a position here, whether we defer it directly, that's our recommendation, or we leave it as we originally had it in the proposal.
Well, I know there was a, I listened to the city council meeting and there was a discussion about the lot sizes and from what I heard from the meeting, it didn't go over well with the smaller lots. Now, Chris says there's been other discussion. I would be interested in seeing what they have to say after he talked to them. But right now, it looks like they're not going to approve it the way it is.
Correct. But it's up to this body if we wanted to make any recommendation. That's open to us. And then...
That sounds like another meeting.
What's that?
Another meeting.
Not for us. It would be for the city council.
Right. So we could, as our body, just say, we're recommending to keep it as we originally proposed. And then it's up for the council then to make any changes or deviations from that. Which, honestly, that would probably be my recommendation, is say, what we've gone through, what we've discussed for months now, that's our recommendation. And then the onus goes to the council for what they need to make decisions on.
Well, I think I've made my point clear all along that I wasn't happy with those revisions, but I see that I felt like maybe I was the sole person on that position, but after listening to city council, it seems like that's the way it was going. So if you want to do that and defer to city council, I'll agree with that, because I never thought it was is a good idea to just outright, you know, say yeah without special use. I thought they were too small, 6,000 square feet.
But you'd be willing to take what we've already put into it and you know, make that as a recommendation and then defer any changes for council to make?
Well, I guess that's the way it was going anyway, right?
No, the way that it's presented is how we originally have the ordinance. So
yeah.
The lot sizes would be... as they are now, R1, 18,000 square feet, R2, 12,000 square feet, and then there would be no R2A district.
So the way they are right
currently
now,
today.
Right. Today.
Without any realignment of
yes.
any of the three.
Right. So that's what they're proposing.
Well.
Or that's what we should propose.
So to clarify it, staff would keep... the development ordinance as it is now, but in the memo state that there was discussion, or if you all end up voting to revise it back to the original proposal, I would put that in the memo. But the direction from city council was what we have presented tonight, and that is what will be presented to EDC and PZC with an acknowledgement if the committee wanted to do something different.
And keep in mind, what city council did was a discussion.
Yes.
It was no formal direction, but it was a discussion. So I want to be clear that while it says staff was directed, it was directed through a non-binding, non-actionable discussion. So what we do here, same thing. We're not a binding. We're not the ultimate decision maker.
Right.
We're making a recommendation. And I'd be of mind to say, let's take what we had actually proposed, move that forward as our recommendation to the council. The whole point is this: the UDO is what do we think is best suited for the recommendation to the council. So that's what I'm looking for, is do we go with what is presented here, which follows the conversation from council, or do we go to what we've spent our past several months on?
I agree with you, Chris, that we as a committee had made some recommendations, had made some decisions about the lot sizes. And I think we presented as we had planned on prior to the last city council meeting when it was discussed. And that would open the door for other city council members to have their input, not only on whether they would agree to the modification of the zoning districts, but also they could tell us how they would change it. Because right now,
yeah.
the sense I got is it's no, but it's
right.
No without any alternatives. So if it's mm-hmm. going to be no, tell us what else you're thinking. And the best way to do that is to present it as we had recommended as the committee. And then the city council members, me, Mr. Funkhauser, Mr. Plocher, the mayor, can all have our two cents in whether or not it should go forward as we recommended as committee, or maybe they want to implement some changes, or recommend some changes as to what we put forward as a committee. So.
Does it go to planning and zoning for changes, or just?
It will go for a public hearing before planning and zoning.
Is that before city council?
No, city council, well, EDC will see it on the 5th, which is next week. And then the week after that, on the 13th, is the public hearing before planning and zoning. And then it'll go to city council.
Yes.
So we can get feedback in the interim before it gets to that.
I think that's a good idea. You know, I could go to the system and see how it plays out. Okay.
Dave?
Yep.
Okay.
So change back.
And then, any other comments? So this is the district standards. There's quite a bit in those ones there. Any other comments on standards for the districts? Okay. Chapter 4?
Chapter 4, use standards. So basically these are dealing with the standards for each of the categories of land uses that we have. Agricultural, residential, commercial, and we also talk about transportation land uses. We fold in the cannabis regulations that were already approved and added some temporary land uses as well as accessory land uses. So there were no revisions recommended from what the committee had made at the last meeting. So if there's any other changes,
comments?
That topic came up in city council as well. Accessory dwelling units. Should this be special use?
Accessory dwelling is at the granny flats, those kind of things.
Correct. Right now they're permitted outright. The accessory commercial uses are special uses.
Mm-hmm.
But what the changes that were implemented from our July meeting was that the corner lots should not be allowed to have a separate driveway. So we've changed that. The attached accessory dwelling units should be they should be allowed to have separate exterior entrances. We kept that. And they can't have separate mailboxes, water meters, or trash bins. But other than that, there's an image in the packet, not in the packet, in the ordinance that shows the different types of accessory dwelling units that can be permitted. You know, maximum 900 square feet is what we're proposing.
Deb, we did talk about it at City Council, but it wasn't an in-depth discussion. The mayor brought it up as just another.
Yeah, I didn't hear much, but he brought it up.
Yeah, we didn't dive into it as a council, but he brought it up about as he did with some of the other things that the UDO
they want to look.
Yeah, that these are things that are coming up, but when the city council gets to it, to be very honest, I don't think this is a one meeting city council presentation.
No,
because of the amount of information, it could be either a very, very long council meeting or several council meetings. But yeah, it was one of those items that was just brought up as this is coming, think about it. Just like signage, it's an item coming up, let's think about it. So that's kind of how that brought up.
We spent three meetings on signage.
Yes, we did.
And there'll be more.
Yes.
When this gets to city council, we're going to spend six meetings on signage.
Bite your tongue. So anything else on the accessory dwelling units?
The only thing is, I don't know. The idea is okay, but I'm still wondering if it should be special use, each case be looked at, you know.
Well, and that's, staff has to review it. So even though it's outright permitted, it's a staff review, it has to meet the criteria. The special use process is much more onerous, and you know, you could walk through the steps involved in a special use for something like this.
So some communities that are contemplating whether or not ADUs are appropriate will allow the detached accessory dwelling units, the ones that are maybe on top of a garage or instead of a garage, through a special use, and the ones that are internal to the home or attached to the home as a permitted use, because they're going to have a much smaller impact visually on the community, where that detached version may have more of an impact.
Right.
So that
may
be a way of splitting it up.
Detached.
Yeah.
I think
so is that what you're recommending, Deb?
Yeah.
Do we want to go down the line and see if everyone else is in agreement with that?
Sure. Dave?
Sure.
You think it should be a special use for the detached?
Yeah.
Dan?
I don't think we need a special use for the detached.
And I'm going to say I don't think it needs to be a special use as either.
So it's
2-2. So 2-2 fails. So it remains as is.
It remains.
So your recommendation was a change, but a tie fails.
Where's our fifth?
I know, exactly. That is a hardship.
It still can be addressed by the city council who may recommend
the
special use.
We'll have staff put in a recommend or a note that it was a 2-2, that it was a recommendation, but it was a split.
Okay.
So we'll have that added to the notes. So.
Okay.
Thank you.
Sure. Chapter 5, are we done with
yeah,
chapter
5? I think we're good on that.
Chapter 5 is development standards, so this deals with off-street parking standards, landscaping and screening, fencing, and outdoor lighting standards. The committee had some comments on the July 20th meeting. We discussed making sod prohibited for commercial land uses. That was not the direction that we ended up going with, so we just ended up making it an encouragement, not necessarily a requirement. We clarified the electrical vehicle charging stations, tree replacement, the fee in lieu of. We wanted that based upon the cost of the tree and installation, not just the cost of the tree. There was a note about native species shall mean non-invasive ornamentals, and parking stall dimensions should be 18 feet with a 2-foot overhang, but otherwise 20 feet. And then we talked about the multi-unit dwelling parking. So the only unresolved issue was we discussed should the minimum off-street parking requirements, first, should it be exclusive of the garage space? And second, should it be one as a minimum for all residential development, or should it only be one as a minimum for multi-unit and two for single unit dwellings? So two-part. First part.
Let's break it down.
First part. When we talk about off-street parking requirements, are we talking about the garage providing it?
So.
Okay. That's how staff has always interpreted it, but yep. There was some discussion.
So off-street parking, when we're talking about attached product in multifamily, off-street should be exclusive of the driveways, meaning they need to provide additional parking beyond just the parking spaces at the building.
Yes.
Dan, you look like you've got a thought on that one.
I'm just trying to picture this in my head how it would work.
So take a small townhome development, 4 townhome buildings. Each has its own driveways, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But you'd have to have a cluster of maybe 4 or 6 nose-in parking spaces somewhere.
No. Yeah.
Same thing with an apartment.
Yeah.
So that, I think we're all in consensus then, that yes, it should be in addition to the driveways.
Yes.
For multi.
For multifamily.
Okay, so.
And attached.
Multifamily
is. Does that include duplex?
Garage.
No.
Plus.
Because that is single too.
Hold on 1 second. Multifamily, we've already addressed that. We've required them now to provide 0.25 spaces per unit for guest parking.
I got a question about the unit part. Is that a unit building? Or
it's a dwelling unit.
So if it's a 12-unit building, 24-unit building,
mm-hmm.
That's the ratio based on.
So what staff was asking, when we talk about off-street parking in general, we're talking about garage space, not open surface space, correct? Because
yes, the garage space, interior garage spaces should not be part of the calculation at all.
think we're conflating the two.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's make sure.
So,
do we have
if we say a single family dwelling unit has to provide two off-street parking, we're saying they have to provide a two-car garage.
I would think so.
Correct. That's how staff has always interpreted it and applied it. Is that?
And that's, no, I'm, my take is that it is not the garages. That the garage is
not. So they need to provide two parking spaces elsewhere on their site outside of the garage if they're.
Yeah, so if you're requiring two spaces per unit, it's not the garage space. Because there are certain instances where, whether it's a multifamily or a townhome, you could do a no driveway situation where, yes, you are considering that the parking is inside the garage. Those ones always give me a little hard.
So that's separate. That's the second part of the question. So the first part is just, is the garage included on off-street parking? The only concern I have is if a structure is at its, you know, maximum setback,
mm-hmm.
and they have a short driveway span.
Yes, that doesn't meet a 18 to 20 foot.
Right.
Yes.
So then they would not be allowed to build.
Mm-hmm.
But if we include the garage as part of the off-street parking, then they would be able to utilize and build up to that property line, up to their setback line.
It is typical for communities to count the garage spaces as parking for the unit. If there's required guest parking, agree that that should be in a separate space that's more accessible to the public. But, you know, for your private unit, garage spaces do typically count.
Yeah. And so that's why we added the additional 0.25 for multifamily and townhome.
It was a garage plus the
correct.
That's what I
garage plus 0.25.
Garage plus then the 0.25 for guests.
So right now we're saying that a multifamily, it's two.
So right now one is for multifamily.
One for multi and then.
And two for single family. And then one plus 0.25.
And then, so it's 0.25 for the multi. Now, single family detached.
Is two.
Is just two.
Mm-hmm.
Single family attached.
Is one.
Is one.
Mm-hmm.
Now, single family attached, we do the 0.25.
We would only do that for multi-unit, so townhomes and apartments.
Yes, mm-hmm. And that's what I just want to make sure. Yep. So duplexes, to your point, are excluded from the extra 0.25.
Are they still
two? There will be two.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I think I read it says one.
I was asking the question.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is the
right.
Minimum, yeah.
Yeah, two.
Because there was, we went through this there, and there was the one graphic of basically one car garages.
Mm-hmm.
If we would be accepting of one car garages.
I think the graphic looks like two cars.
Do you remember where that one?
I got what?
Looks like two cars.
What page are we looking at?
Yeah. There's several graphics.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember where that's.
So it would be chapter 5. And there's a graphic here. It's it. I don't know which one.
Yeah, it keeps scrolling to it.
Let's see if I can find a page for you.
It's a lot easier to scroll through paper than the PDFs.
I had a paper copy today. I had my computer.
Mm-hmm. And I'm
done. And my iPad trying to find pages today. Going back and forth.
458 pages. It's a lot to.
Yeah, to take in. It is accessory dwelling unit. It is actually in chapter 4.
That's why I can't find it.
It is page 3 of 47 in chapter 4.
Okay, so
what page is that?
3 of 48.
Some GDL.
On the PDF, it is 61 of 451.
So, yeah. 61. And it's 280 of 451.
Mm-hmm. See, I got mine's different. Oh, I'm different.
Yeah, you and I are the same. It's just I'm zoomed out.
Yeah, but I'm on page 61.
Oh, okay.
Depends on that.
You might be looking away, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm on page 280.
You just look like Duke or Chris.
That's what the standard is, what we were proposing, 2 par. There was discussion at the July 20th meeting of a 1 minimum. So that was not resolved, so that's what staff is asking.
So if 2 is this recommendation, if anybody wanted to come in with a proposal, they would have to come in with a, either under a PD or a variance request. Those would be our 2 mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So if we keep it at 2, there are venues for people to ask for that. So recommendation is keep it
at... So it wouldn't be outright prohibited?
Well, it is outright prohibited.
It wouldn't be outright permitted.
Yes.
So you would, if you wanted to only provide one,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yes, I'm sorry. Yes. But they still would have, like Chris said, the avenue to try and do a 1 car. If
yeah.
Okay.
I think duplexes are the same. Or are we on duplexes? Yeah. Right.
Yeah, duplexes would be 2.
Yeah.
Single family would be 2.
But I think in the wording it says 1.
Townhomes and multifamily would be 1. If that's what you want to keep it.
1.25. Yes. A minimum of 1 parking spaces.
For townhomes, yes.
No, it says dwelling duplex.
Do you want to change that to 2?
Yes.
Duplex.
Why not say 2 for single family duplex? The spaces in the garage would count in those instances. Then for multifamily and townhouses, it'd be 1.25, the 0.25 for guest parking.
Right.
Yeah, that's, I'd be comfortable with that. And that's the minimum. I mean.
You know, I don't like detached garages in multifamily. You know, they're in the rear. You know, works for that development. But if it's attached, it should be a 2 car. And I actually believe, like for residential, unattached garages should be 2 car, unless it's an addition. For one extra 1 car, like, you know, making a 3 car slot. But I don't know how the other members feel about that.
So right now the standard is 2. That's the minimum.
On R1?
Unattached. You mean for a detached garage?
Yeah, I'm sorry, detached, yeah.
It still would be 2.
Okay, good.
So on... I'm on 63 of the PDF, page 51 of the packet. Townhome, or dwelling townhouse, number 2, a minimum of 1 parking space as required, section 10.5.1, shall be provided attached or detached.
That's town.
Right.
That was in a use specific standard. Mm-hmm. So it was requiring that one of those spaces provided for a townhouse be in a garage.
Mm-hmm.
Rather than be just like a surface parking lot.
So still 2, but 1 is...
So for, and that was for just for townhouses, where
yeah.
we were saying that we have a 1.25 per unit requirement.
Mm-hmm.
Deb, you're only talking about detached, correct?
No, if it's townhomes, it's attached, again, 2. It's all 2 car and attached for me.
Well, you only want 2 car only for...
Attached.
attached, no matter what the use is.
Right. See, that's pretty atypical for a townhouse. The typical width of a townhouse, and you know, wouldn't necessarily support or accommodate a two-car attached garage. So we're proposing that each townhouse would be required to just have one parking space for that unit, and then there would be a separate kind of public-ish parking area where guests could go and park outside of a driveway or garage.
What do we do now? What is it now?
It's two now.
Yeah.
I say two.
The standard's two. No. You're not going to get a lot of people who want to do a one-car garage.
Special
I mean,
use.
Dave, you could probably chime in as to how many developments you've done that show a one-car.
Not many at all.
Exactly. Our market doesn't really...
Special use. Let's not say it's outright permitted one-car. That's the way it is, and that's what the market bears.
So a parking space is not a use in that sense? Yeah. When we say special use, it's land use. Mm-hmm. So the minimum would be one if you want it, or the minimum would be two.
Right.
But if you do one, someone could come in and do one plus the guest parking and meet the standard, or they would have to do two. So do you want it two across the board?
Yes. In my opinion, yes. I don't know how everybody else feels, but in my opinion, yes. And then get a special use if somebody wants to come in and propose townhomes and one-car garages.
That could be handled through the planned unit development process. That's where that flexibility could come in rather than a special use process. So certainly if that's the direction we want to have two-car garages per townhome, we could certainly adjust the standards that way. And we could, if the direction is to require those two parking spaces to be in a garage, we could establish that standard as well.
Okay.
So
that works for me.
I'm of mind to have it as the one still, but Dave and Dan, what's your...
I'm still okay with the one.
Yeah, I mean, right now it's, you know, we're being flexible with the one and being open to more of a different product as a minimum of one, but, you know, the market and what they're selling, the majority, everything in town here is two, so... I'm okay with leaving it for the flexibility.
So it's 1.25.
Yeah,
correct. The one correct. Plus the good. Yeah. And be very candid, I'd be surprised if in 10 years we see a development with a one-car townhome. I'd be surprised if we end up with something like that. But it, as Dave said, it affords the flexibility of development.
But there are properties that exist, especially along 47 that are in the older part of town that are duplexes
with one
car garage. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but those are older homes, right?
Those are. But if they were to be damaged and need to be rebuilt and have to be built to the current standard, mm-hmm. they would be required to provide two car garages.
See what City Council says. Or how the PUD works out.
So we're basically saying we would keep it as the 1.25.
For townhomes and condos.
Mm-hmm. And then we'll...
And two for duplexes and single families.
So will that part of the section be updated? So under the dwelling units, townhomes, it says one right now. Is it going to be 1.25?
Yeah, it's going to be updated. Because it was unresolved. That's why they didn't change it.
Okay.
And then I know you mentioned some of the older neighborhood duplexes. Actually, over on Independence, which is actually not quite as old, that's by the courthouse, those have one-car duplexes as well. And those are not that old, really, in comparison. Okay. Anything further on the
five.
Development standards for five? Steph, did have anything else on that one? I think that covered staff's comments, right?
Yes.
Anything else? Are we ready for chapter six?
Science. Again, purpose, the measurements, the permitted types, the temporary signs, and then the maintenance standards.
So the discussion on July 20th, we talked about two things. Murals were one. We stated that they should be required to have a building permit, permitted over 70% of the non-crime areas. We got to a lot of the weeds on that. And after a legal review with the consultant, it's probably best not to regulate murals as signs.
She will.
Jackie will expand more.
So, way back at the beginning of the process, we discussed a Supreme Court case called Reed versus the Town of Gilbert, Arizona. So, in this case, the Supreme Court clarified that sign copy is protected speech under the First Amendment. So, a municipality isn't able to distinguish between commercial speech or non-commercial speech, including art. So how do you define what art is without looking at it, reading the content, and distinguishing it from advertising language? So if the city were to decide to regulate murals as signs, those murals could be, a Coca-Cola sign or a McDonald's sign or, any type of commercial advertising language could be on the mural, and the city wouldn't be able to control that. So most communities decide to not address murals as signs so that the city can have control and other mechanisms to ensure that murals are public art and not advertisements.
How do they do that?
Yeah. So some communities will have a facade easement program where it's essentially the city is taking on the facade as sort of an easement, and then through the
we have that actually.
Do we?
Yes, we have our art program.
Sure.
And it's only for public art where the city has participated in some way of funding it, or it's on public property. So.
But with private property.
We do not address it on private property.
Okay, but that's where the sign
is going to predominantly be.
Well, but you're saying it's going
to
cause more problems than...
The city could choose to extend that easement program to private property. I don't know if there's anything in the regulations currently that would actually prevent or prohibit art. You could paint the side of your house whatever colors you want to do that, right? Unless your HOA is restricting you from doing it. What the city would be doing is regulating that as a sign if it had that commercial copy or commercial language.
Thoughts?
So are we going to write something with an easement, or do we have that?
No, what we have now that was adopted by City Council is a public art policy and program. And it's only for those properties that either are required to provide us with a public art easement, which we do have one property downtown that has provided an easement for future public art, or if the city is involved somehow, either funding or through some mechanism on a private building that wants to do a mural.
Like the car wash.
The car wash.
So Paradise Car Wash has a mural on the side.
So we don't regulate that. It's art.
Is it? Or is it free speech?
No, if we regulate it on the signs, it becomes not art, but signage.
Is that a sign?
No, it's not a sign. There's no permit required for art on a building.
So you consider that art?
Not my impression. The code does not say it's a sign. And
I'm
so
still confused.
If you regulate it under signage, then it is a sign. If you don't, then it is art.
How should we go about this to get
We should not regulate it as a sign.
That's what they're saying.
We didn't want to do that.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, you did want to regulate it from the last meeting.
Yeah.
You wanted to regulate it as a sign.
We talked about size and where it could be.
Oh, yeah, I know when you said sizes.
And what they're saying is we're opening up a can of worms.
By saying a size.
By saying murals are now signs.
Mm-hmm.
Because it can be construed as the city regulating the content.
So we are the good side.
We are not regulating murals as signs.
Okay, that's good.
And so.
They're murals.
They're art.
Art.
Yes.
Okay.
And regardless of the content, whether it's for that business or not, it's just.
Not even good trouble with signs.
It would be trouble.
Yeah.
Okay. What we have to do now is hope someone doesn't put something obscene up on the side of the building.
So we do have regulations about obscenity.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're, you know, like anyone else, there are going to be people who are going to push the limits.
Right, that's right.
Yes. Go right up to it if they want it. No. We'll deal with it if they do.
As it comes.
As it comes.
Okay. That one, I think we're good.
Okay. So the second item was the downtown A-frame signs permitted in the public right-of-way. And the recommendation from the last meeting was that only one be allowed per business, and the sign must be located within 750 feet of the business. So that was added.
But the size of the mural, we didn't talk about that. Somebody proposed it. We can't talk about that.
Yeah, so we're not regulating it. So
backing that off.
Discussion goes away.
Yeah, because you were looking at. If you're looking at the staff notes, that was...
It said 70, then they wanted 80. I'm thinking, why not make it 100, you know?
But we're not going to regulate that now.
Okay. Because at that point, I'm thinking about, like, the silo. Would you want 100% of the silo covered in a mural? And now I think you would want to still see the structure, right? But now we're into the part we can't do.
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind.
So the only thing that was unresolved from this section was yard signs. We had little regulation on yard signs, then the discussion with the committee was to heavily regulate it, and then it was to come back and do a little bit of regulation, so staff just wants some clear direction. We'll help you work your way through it. But so right now, it was suggested increasing the sign size from 4 square feet to 16 square feet and allow up to 32 square feet for those residential parcels that have frontage along a major arterial.
I asked Chris how many signs that would be. He figured signs at 24 by 18, because, you know, you're giving me 16 feet, but I don't know what that means, the signs.
But so...
I just want to see how many signs.
Was there a number of signs? It was just the square footage.
Unlimited
signs up to
election within the election.
Yes,
right.
60 prior, 30 after.
Mm-hmm.
So that it wasn't a number of signs.
It was feet.
Yeah, it's a square footage. So you can't have a sign larger than 32 square feet. But
I kind of want to get an idea how many square feet somebody's going to have. If this is what they can have. A sheet
of plywood 8x4.
No, I mean like a sign. Sign.
Yeah.
Say, you know, you got 16 feet, how many signs would that be by 24, 18 versus
3? But I think you're combining two things. The square footage, it's not a combination of all your signs. So
that's
you,
just for a big sign.
It's just for the sign. So you could, the way it's being proposed right now is you could have
116 square foot.
You
sign.
Could have 100.
Yeah, right. Let's be clear.
Let's be clear.
So
but
yard
it's
signs,
not.
right
now, yard signs, you guys wanted to put a limit of 2.
Right.
Well, that was the all year round.
All year round. 2 concurrently, except during the period 60 days before and 15 days after a federal, state, or local election, then you could have an unlimited number.
Chris, I know I'm not supposed to talk right now, but we're gonna have to at some point.
We had public comment. I apologize, but we had a public comment section, and I know this was an issue for you guys. I would have appreciated it at that point. You will still have many points to bring this up, so I know where you're gonna go with this. So let us discuss this if we could. I appreciate it. Thank you. So as you were saying, it's 2 signs all year round, but then during the campaign season or election season, it's unlimited as to how many you could put on there. And then there's the collector road issues. Now, this one still bugs me, personally, because we came to a consensus on kind of a size, location, numbers. I know, Deb, you've got some strong opinions on what you'd like to see as restrictions for them. You know, Dave, you mentioned a 4x8 sign, which is 48, so the 32 square foot doesn't even allow for a standard 4x8 sign. So this one is going to be something that is a big topic of discussion at the council. Yeah. And this is just one small piece of the sign ordinance. So we've been back and forth on this one. So this is.
So just so it's clear, this is. You do not have to have a limit.
Right.
You guys chose to have a limit.
Yeah, but that's on signs every day, right?
Well, it was both. There was a compromise that this committee made. We made a compromise on the everyday signs and the election signs.
Is there a reason why we'd want more than two?
Because sometimes people just want to have signs to put up what they how they feel about things. So, to be...
And the birthday thing and the, you know...
We clarified that one. Now,
kind of glazed over the birthday thing.
Because we found out there's language, we worked language on, you know, the 72 hours.
Right. So if you have a sign that's up... for 72 hours, then you're exempt from this.
Right.
So it can be at any size
Right.
So, what I would be willing to make a recommendation is remove what we have proposed for the yard signs.
Remove what?
Remove the restrictions we put in for yard signs. The quantity of the 2-year round, remove that. Remove the... Well, I mean, we could keep it as a maximum of 48 square feet because, honestly, I don't think any site needs more than a 4x8, but you're not restricting quantity. We're obviously not restricting then copy on them, but I think...
And you're also saving staff time because
whatever
you regulate, we have to enforce. And so we would have to be able to identify how long a sign has been up. Is it a
boy? Well, you can identify
election?
How many, that would be easy.
But keep in mind, now if we put a restriction that says you can only have 2 signs up, not only now, you know, typically they only have to go and look at signs during the election season when somebody makes a complaint. They have to be vigilant 365 days a year if somebody has a third sign.
I think what happened is somebody would call if it was aggravating them, right?
Right. So my recommendation would be...
So there's 2 ways of enforcement. There is responsive, so if there's a complaint, and then there is, that we are actively going out, proactively looking at things. We've done it both ways in the past. Is the only concern is staff time and availability to monitor signs.
Do other towns limit the number of signs?
Yeah.
Yes,
and
it depends.
That's the way it is.
There are signs that do restrict it. There are signs that are communities that don't.
And there are communities with 50 inspectors and communities with 3 inspectors. We have 1 inspector dedicated to.
Yes. So.
To signs.
My
I just wanted to know if there was something we could fall back on if there was some, you know, whatever.
Well, we do have the fallback.
The whole yard's full of signs.
Well, we do have the ability,
clutter.
If it's visually impacting traffic,
mm-hmm.
there's that ability. If there's an impact to the community that deals with health, safety, we have that.
And there's restrictions on where they can put them, right?
It has to be on private
property. On private property.
Right, yeah, but... you're not supposed to put them in the parkways either.
Correct.
Right.
Right.
So,
correct.
So it minimizes the danger of people driving and not seeing.
Yeah, that wouldn't even happen.
Well,
so
no,
it
does. And staff will let people know, hey, you need to move your sign, or they will remove it if they can't get touch.
No, if somebody was following the rules and could have as many signs as they want, if you're competing the right of way, it wouldn't happen anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Just
so,
be ugly to your neighbors.
So my recommendation
very
would be.
I'm sure, in some cases.
My recommendation to keep us out of a sticky wicket would be to remove what we put in the recommendation, which was the 2-year round and the 60-day, 30-day. I would just remove it. And then
Just do a maximum size.
Maximum size.
If it becomes an issue, then we can readdress it.
It can always come back. And council will have its chance.
I mean, I see it as a non-issue most of the time, but there's always one or two people that like to abuse, yeah.
So the only thing I'd say with the size restriction, slight change from what we had, I would say, on collectors and arterials, maximum 48 square feet.
Now we're getting bigger after this meeting.
But it's a standard sign size. That's the only reason. 32 is not a standard size.
Well, why didn't we propose it? I didn't propose it. Who proposed
Well, the 4x8 is a 32.
No. I'm sorry.
The 4 foot by 8 foot is
32. 32.
That's your standard.
The 32, because a 4x8, that's what I was thinking. You want to do a 4x8 sign, that's 32. So 32 is fine. Arterials and collectors.
Yeah.
Now, on any other street, so locals, do we do 16 square feet? Because that's, honestly, that's...
No, you got residential.
What is our 18 by 24 is... Well, 24 by 24 is 4 feet.
4 by 4?
3 by 5.
Well, so your typical yard sign, 18 by 24, it's like 3.5 square feet. So if you do a maximum of 4 square feet of a sign, 4 feet allows your typical yard signs. So that's on your local streets. So you can't have a...
I still want to push it more than we have to.
Trust me, I don't... I want to keep this as easy as possible, especially for staff, and trying to avoid, issues with, freedom of speech and other types of things like that. Being flexible for people who want to put signs up, but also being conscious of not having a blight all the time.
Right.
There will be no win no matter what we do.
Maybe just have city council look at the way it's written and see if they want to change it.
I don't want it going up there the way it's written.
You don't?
I don't. I mean...
You want to just clean it?
Do you like the recommendation I put out there?
Yes. I do. When we were here last month, I said, we're going to get pushback from this. And I've already gotten pushback.
Yes.
And not from the people who are here diligent at our meetings, from other people in the community who... by proclamation, know more about law than I do. So they are concerned about First Amendment infringements. And
well, we do need guidance on that. I mean, just like the murals.
Yes.
Yeah. We want to do the right thing.
And I think that's the problem.
But I don't know why we're changing the size. Is that like not the things we can't control either?
Dave corrected me. 32 square feet.
So the other one's okay too?
The 16?
For Feeder Roads, Feeders.
So... the suggested increase in sign size from 4 feet to 16 square feet, that was the recommendation.
That was
staff recommendation.
Suggestions based off of the comments. I would keep it consistent on all properties instead of making a distinction.
So it would be...
Well, if you're going to put it on Route 47, people going by fast, yeah, I get that. A bigger sign would be better, It's not really irritating, as much as it is in a residential neighborhood. And I'm just saying irritating because it just seems like it's not political signs. It's just any sign could be that big.
True. That's it. Any sign can have that size. Staff is recommending the larger sign, but you would...
I'm not recommending the larger size. I'm just saying... whatever size you all decide, just be consistent among all.
So instead of differentiating between collector and
collector and non-collector, just...
So that means that we would say 32 square feet. So somebody could put a 32 square foot sign. Dan could put one in his front yard.
Right. For anything.
Yeah, and some people will and some people won't. So, but I think what they're trying to say is it's going to make it very difficult for staff to go around and police signage size in residential areas and on major arterials and things like that. So they want to kind of eliminate the location conditions of signage.
Unlimited.
So 32 is the maximum?
aggregate on a parcel, and I could split that, or I could have 50, 32 square foot signs if I wanted.
The second, the latter.
Okay.
So unlimited.
Yeah, well, it's the same person with the meal. They're going to go
so
back up to the line.
So, just to close this one.
Can we please?
It is a unlimited number of signs, no timing restriction, and the size is 32 square feet maximum.
Okay.
And now, the 32 is, just to be clear on it,
I'm up for
it's
the size, but
person.
Unlimited, I don't think so, for me.
Okay.
But see what city council is.
We have the consensus on the change, though, I believe. Okay.
Well, there's going to be 8 different opinions on this.
Yes.
When it gets to city council. There will be.
Planning and zoning, too.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
Good.
Anything else on signage from staff?
No, not from staff.
Anyone else on signage? Aside from just the irritant. Okay. Chapter 7, subdivision standards.
Yep. Chapter 7 is all about off-street parking and landscaping and fencing and other outdoor lighting standards. We came to consensus at the last meeting about block lengths and connectivity. Eliminated pedestrian and bicycle connections for cul-de-sacs. Cluster development density, we kept the density as proposed. We added cul-de-sac reduction, block length reduction as a bonus, density bonus in those cluster developments, which are PUDs. Anti-monotony standards, I think we got it wrong in the graphic. Chris wanted the separation, or the committee agreed that the separation should be 2 in between, not 3, and the graphic is showing 1 in between. So we are going to revise that. And then there was a request about the park and recreation standards, so we wanted to cite a source. So the consultant is going to cite a study that was done by another community.
Yes, which we just pulled those numbers from another community in the region, so we'll just cite that source as a footnote in the table.
So. Table 1079D, that is from another community. They did their own study on
it. And those are kind of typical numbers that are utilized.
Kind of the
it's sort of a
Elliers.
Yeah, like Elliers. The Elliers, yeah.
So
exactly.
Is there a reason we would deviate from their standard research and statistics and go to a specific community's as to the statistical resource?
Eilers was done in the 80s.
But they have an updated version.
We can certainly revert to the updated version. We do know that the kind of original is mm-hmm. a little bit outdated. It
yes.
projects a little higher than what is typical these days.
Okay.
But that's definitely up to the city.
But did that community use the updated Eilers, or did they do an independent study?
That I'm not sure of.
Okay. If I could get that, I'd
Yeah,
it'd be good to see both sets if we, sure. even if we have to reach out to Eilers, and then I'd like to see their source of that data. I want to make sure that we're that their data.
The numbers aren't as far off as our original ones, but sure, we will.
Okay.
We will do that. Cluster developments. Staff recommends cluster development be allowed as proposed, but as part of a PUD per feedback from City Council.
And on that one, go ahead, Deb.
Prime farmland.
So, yeah, Deb has the comment on prime farmland as to why that is being a category and called out as
a bonus.
Because you can utilize that prime farmland. There are people that utilize it for orchards, or they. I don't know if it would happen here, but.
So orchards, community gardens, conversion to.
By me reading it, it thinks that you. I thought you could take prime farmland and say, "Hey, that's a bonus. I'm going to do a cluster subdivision on here, and use prime farmland." Well,
No,
talking to Chris, he said, no, we'll keep a piece of the farm
right
over here. But isn't that an excuse to use prime farmland to build a cluster neighborhood that has more density in it, using that as a guise?
So the idea with the cluster development is those are resources that we want to preserve and protect
for future.
So the prime, idea of preserving and protecting prime farmland is that it's, you know, a very important resource for the community. We all need to eat. We all need food. So if a in order to protect that resource, we're saying if that's placed in the conservation easement, if that can never be developed on, it has to always either remain open space or as, you know, active agricultural land, then you are able to cluster homes on another portion of the site to still get the same number of homes that you would have gotten had you developed the full set.
So I still don't understand. You're taking prime farmland to make a development out of that doesn't have like trees on it or a wetlands. And
no, you're preserving
right
the prime. You're not taking it to build on it. You're preserving it. So
you have a corn grow around or whatever the crop is.
They could.
So yeah, it could still grow. You could still keep it as a farmette maybe, and then have, instead of utilizing all the land for a subdivision of homes, you're preserving a portion of it and then taking the remaining portion, but keeping that density that you would have had if you would have developed the whole site.
And you're still, you know, planting soybeans and corn or whatever's over there, hay.
Yeah, that is.
And that's a feature.
That's an option. Well, to preserve open space and
land. That doesn't seem right to me. But again, city council.
Well, we have feedback that Yorkville wants to keep its character.
Right, but nobody said you take a piece of, you know, prime farmland, and it's just a development at that point.
No, the farmland is saved.
Yeah, you're trying to preserve it.
You're preserving the farmland. You're not building
it. What part of that prime farmland are you putting the houses on?
So say it's a 20-acre farmland. They can preserve 15 acres of it and build on 5 acres, but get a little bit more density than they would be allowed if they were just building on a straight 5-acre parcel.
I don't know. It just seems like a slippery slope here.
To what? A slippery slope to what?
Saying prime farmland and calling it a cluster development for conservation.
There isn't anything in the code that would protect prime farmland from subdivision development today. So if I owned a 20-acre piece of property that is prime farmland, and there is a definition of prime farmland, and it has to do with the soil conditions and other factors that make it better for agriculture than other areas. But if I owned 20 acres of prime farmland today, I could come into the city, propose a, you know, 18,000 square foot lot subdivision, have what that would be about 40 homes on my 20 acres. All my prime farmland is gone away. Through this new process, though, I could say I'm only going to develop on 10 of those acres, still get my 40 homes out of it, but the other 10 acres, those are going to remain in a conservation easement. They're either going to be agricultural or open space moving forward. And that's the way the city can help protect that farmland.
How are you going to get your equipment back in there if it's in the back?
That would be up to me as a property owner to figure that out and up to the design of the land.
I don't know. In my opinion, the way it was sold when we looked at this was we were preserving a special feature.
Which prime farmland?
I guess I never read that. We talked about it, but I guess I never saw that bonus part from prime farmland, which stuck out to me today when I read it.
So when you do the calculations, you're really gaining one dwelling unit per acre. It's not a lot of a bonus. You're gaining one.
But to me, farmland, there's farms everywhere, and they just take them and put subdivisions in them. And now you're just saying you can do the same thing, but you got to protect a certain area of the farm. But it doesn't seem logical to me. Are you preserving it enough to do anything with?
Depends on the size of the
We're not dictating what portion the owner would say this is what would be a usable area for me to farm, and this would be a usable area for residential. We do get a lot of complaints or comments from residents to say, oh, I moved next to a farm and I thought it was going to stay a farm. Now it's being rezoned for residential development. This is encouraging to keep the rural character of Yorkville rural in some ways, instead of just complete resubdivision of all farmland. No one's forcing anyone to do this. This is an option.
I still don't know why it's included, but...
And ultimately, it would be up to the council to approve whether a density increase is allowed, or whether, you know, the cluster subdivision could move forward at all. So if it really doesn't make sense, if someone is trying to pull one over on the city, it is ultimately up to the city council to say whether it's appropriate in Yorkville or not.
And that's why we made it a PUD.
Right. Was this originally PUD, or was
it? No, it was not.
From the last council meeting. So,
correct.
So this was outright permitted,
yes, it was.
Which
this is
my recommendation,
for PUD.
I would still, from this point of view from the committee, recommend it as a outright permitted, since this is a, it's an incentive-based type of development for cluster. It has significant benefit for the community, for the city. You know, tighter development means less roads, less infrastructure, less cost for the city maintenance-wise. I would say recommend it as a outright permitted, and then let the council make the decision to change it.
They did mention that too in the meeting.
But that would be my recommendation, is to go back to it being outright permitted, but I'll look for feedback from the others. I think you want it as especially or PUD.
Yeah.
I look at it this way. I mean, we were asked to come together as a committee to kind of streamline some of this development, where staff is not going through all of these special uses and processes and things like that. So we kind of came up with this clustering development as another way, basically, to develop a piece of property, but it streamlines it. So I came up with, you know, what I was voting for was, you know, basically to keep it as an outright, and then the city and council can determine which way to go on that.
I agree to keep it as an outright permitted, but just like we have with the smaller lot sizes, I think we're going to have 8 city council members with 8 different opinions on this.
Yeah.
So, again, this is just going to be a recommendation from our committee to the city council, whether or not it makes it past that and is outright permitted or needs to be done with a PUD.
Yeah,
remain to be seen.
That,
mm-hmm. We're only recommending here. So.
Yes.
the finalization of all this is, it's a fight for another day.
Are we good with that chapter?
Yeah, so keeping that as outright permitted. And just one other I had, going back in here, connectivity index calculation.
Mm-hmm.
I believe we wanted that removed from prior conversations.
And encouraged.
So now it's, is it in here still as encouraged, or is it?
Yes, it's encouraged.
Let's see. The connectivity index calculates. Okay. No, it still is.
While you're in, Dave, you have a time commitment, right?
I'm okay right now.
You're okay right now? Okay.
Thank you.
So it is still required in here. Do you want it as a recommendation?
Recommendation or removed?
I thought we agreed to encourage as opposed to required.
So what we removed was the density bonuses for that, for block links. Remember we talked about that? That's what we removed. I was not told to remove the connectivity index because it's basically nodes based off of street length. And
yeah, it essentially limits the number of cul-de-sacs that you can have in a subdivision. It doesn't 100% restrict them, But it does just make sure you have a certain level of connectivity. This is for public safety and also for walkability, bikeability, so people can get around their neighborhoods a bit easier.
And we did test this in the community, and most were at or above the connectivity ratio.
So the way it states, connectivity index shall be used to determine adequacy of street design layout. But you're saying that the bonuses were removed?
Yeah, remember we had bonuses under block lengths and...
Yes, so that was taken out of that. I was just looking to see. I'd have to go back one more meeting to find my notes on that one.
Yeah, so block length, so we're keeping the block length at 1,320 feet as the maximum length, and encouraging lengths of 800 feet or less. So we were requiring, now we're encouraging, and we've removed the bonuses for shorter block lengths.
Are we really in favor of encouraging?
That's the tough part, is when you put in encouraging, what does it do?
Kind of says, hey, we'd like it this way.
Exactly. So is it relevant to keep it in? From my point of view, it's either required or it's not.
Right.
Yep. Dan?
You want it out?
I know staff is of mind that this would be beneficial.
It would be helpful when these are outright subdivisions.
Mm-hmm.
PUDs are a different animal.
Yes.
But this gives us some standards to work with developers.
And through the PUD process, they could ask for deviations if the property was, you know, situated in a way that it really needed to have more cul-de-sacs.
Mm-hmm.
The PUD process would be their avenue to present their case and get that approved.
Which I think one of our intents is to try to minimize the number of PUDs to keep things streamlined and conforming with the UDO. So with that, I'd probably think that it would come out.
You want it out? Dan?
Take it out, that's fine.
Dave?
Yep.
And the graphic.
Deb?
Yep, and the graphic.
Well, the graphic will come out if it's out.
Yeah.
Is that all for chapter 7?
That's 7.
Chapter 8, this is just the UDO review and approval process. So we went through a couple of iterations of discussing like procedures, processes, administrative authorities for special use PUDs, variations, appeals, and et cetera. So at our July 20th meeting, there was a recommendation from the committee to require neighborhood meetings by developers, not just encourage them at a staff level, and the requirement was for all PUD special uses and rezonings, not for variances, and that there were notification criteria and deadline criteria. Took this to legal counsel for review. If we begin to set standards such as time, place, we are regulating under the authority of the city. And then that becomes our responsibility to make sure that the time, place, and manner of these meetings are met to the standard of the city. So then they are no longer a developer neighborhood meeting, they are a city meeting. So the recommendation from city attorney was to keep it as a staff level recommendation.
How? I've gone through this several times through other communities where you don't advance without a neighborhood meeting. And I don't know if that is a matter of home rule exception
it
or
may
not.
Be a home rule exception.
But I was going to say, most communities that I have to deal with now, there's no exception to it. You do a neighborhood meeting, and that's it. And you don't advance without that. So, while I get, you know, regulating it, putting it in, our legal staff is a little concerned about that. I think that there is true benefit to making that happen, and that having it part of the process. I can't see how it's necessarily becomes a city required meeting, but I think there's got to be a way for us to have that in as a part of our standards without it being city meeting. So I'd be inclined to pursue it and find a way.
So it can be.
It's just, it's a...
If we dictate the time, which is you got to do it 15 days before the manner, you have to send and certify. And the time, manner, I think...
But do we have to dictate that?
You don't.
Just, can we say specifically it just before, you know, whether, so your process, you're going to EDC. Neighborhood meeting shall be held prior to?
And it's vague, yes. That's the recommendation from staff, from the city administrator.
So we can require the neighborhood, but not in a form of deadline?
Time, place, and manner, yeah.
But staff recommends it, it's has to happen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
We don't dictate the time, place, and manner. It would be up to the developer to do that.
Correct.
Right.
So if they wanted to do it online an hour before the EDC meeting,
be Zoom,
they could do it. Mm-hmm. But it has to happen.
Yes.
Typically, I'd recommend requiring that any public feedback received at that meeting be submitted as a part of their application so that the EDC or whoever it is can consider that along with whatever they're proposing.
So that sets a little bit of a criteria as to...
Yes. Staff would just recommend if it came in, it would be part of the public record.
It's setting a time frame without actually setting
it. Exactly. Correctly. So I don't want to...
At least 48 hours.
So if there is public feedback and we ask them if they want to share that information, then they can share it. They can submit if there were written feedback. They can submit that. The goal is that they reach out to the community before the meeting of a public hearing process.
And we should hear the feedback because that's going to help with the decision.
Exactly. And we require the notice, so residents will get notice. But at least this is more of a personal notice. They can get a lot of the questions out and answered before there's a public hearing and understand the project before, you know, city council has to make a decision on it or PZC has to make a decision on it.
Right.
Is notice based on distance the statutory public notice? So are we 150 exclusive of right? What's the notification?
Ours is 500.
Because we exceed
the
state statute.
The state is 250.
No. Just for, this is something every community is a little different. 500 is inclusive of any right-of-way across.
Correct.
So we don't have to worry about backing that. It's just 500 from
corner. 500.
From. Okay. So everybody good with that?
So it's a recommendation as by staff, and it's for PUD special uses and rezoning. Not for variances or for variances, too.
Variances have to go through a different process anyways, right?
They all go
through
the same public hearing process. But if somebody is saying, I just want to encroach, you know, a foot with my garage, are we going to make the...
Notice 500.
Correct.
And so it's a staff recommendation.
We know they have the notice, but do they have to hold a meeting with their...
But when you...
The informal neighborhood meeting.
When you update.
They're going to be doing them every week.
Yeah, exactly. When you update the process, the application process, it'll be in there for a neighborhood meeting. You know, so it's not, you know, this project, yes, that project, no.
Right.
It's just going to be in there as a neighborhood meeting required for these.
As recommended by staff. Mm-hmm. That's how it is right now.
Okay. Yeah. That takes care of review and approval process, unless anybody else has anything else. Chapter 9.
All right.
Nonconformance.
Last chapter. There were no committee comments on this, no revisions. It's pretty much as it is currently.
Anything?
Literally no changes.
Okay. I have nothing on that one. We good?
Good.
Staff, do you have anything else?
So, because packets went out already for, will be going out tomorrow morning for EDC, if they're not out already, I'll provide an update of this conversation for the members. And then when we go to PZC, I will provide a cover memo that talks about all the recommendations from this last meeting. So the document itself will not change because we don't have enough time in between Tuesday meeting, next Tuesday meeting, and the 13th. We're going to have all those outlined, and those will be discussed at the PZC meeting.
So for next week's EDC, though, would it be possible to amend the packet to include the memo with these updates? Obviously not updating the packet content because it takes quite a bit to update all these.
I think I could do a summary.
Or kind of a...
Yeah, summary.
A supplemental.
Yeah, supplemental. I can try to work on that
I think
tomorrow.
That would be good for the EDC to have a supplemental.
If we
can get that in.
Right. If I can't get it into the packet on tomorrow before it's published, then I'll definitely have it at the meeting as a handout.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it's already published.
Yeah, I think
it's already published. Yeah. Yeah.
So, so it'd have to go as a supplemental or at the meeting.
Yeah, at the
okay.
meeting.
Okay. Steph, anything else? And so timing, we've talked about timing. It goes EDC, to go Plan Commission, go to Council. That's our tentative. Are we still on track for the September?
26th. That is the plan. We'll see how... I don't make the schedules for City Council, so
right.
We'll see. We'll see.
But that was your
tentative
schedule that you had there.
Yep.
Okay. Committee members? Anything else? Deb, I know you had a couple things.
Chain link fences and manufacturing, is that just on the front side, the slats?
No.
Privacy slats?
It is on the...
Is it rear only?
I think rear and side.
Rear and side.
Rear and side. Yeah. And it's the vinyl, so it has to have the coating.
Vinyl coated chain link.
Should it be on the front too?
You guys didn't want it on the front. So you tell me, do you want it on the front?
Do you want to look at somebody's junk from the street?
No, they would have to put a different material. It's not that they wouldn't have fencing. You just wouldn't allow the chain link fencing.
Oh, on the
right.
Front.
They're
on the
required
front.
To have
oh,
the
yeah.
fence.
They're
just
required the to have the fence.
Okay.
Yes. Chain links permitted it. On side and
right.
rears.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha.
Final coating.
I thought they could have chain link in manufacturing.
Only in the rear and side. Let's see.
Vinyl coated chain link, rear and side yard only on properties in non-residential districts.
Yep.
And then galvanized chain link only on M1 or M2 properties adjacent to other M1 or M2 properties.
So they're not, those aren't required to have the privacy slats?
No, because they're adjacent to another manufacturing.
Same area. Use, they don't have to have the slats. If it's adjacent to a different use, then yes. It does.
Is that all right?
I don't think one manufacturing use is going to bother another manufacturing use.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay.
The only other question I have is, I think we had a public comment that wanted to be brought up. Would anybody object to allowing a quick comment prior to adjourning?
Go ahead.
If anybody has public comment, we'll open it briefly for a quick public comment.
Okay. I just wanted to point out, based upon that...
If you could, yeah.
Just so we can pick up your voice.
Sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
So just based upon the discussion you had about the murals, the basis for that discussion was Illinois Constitution Article 1, Section 4, freedom of speech or freedom of expression.
Was it?
Did you ask me a question?
No, I think it was. It was. And so it just gets a little frustrating, which I appreciate everything that you've done tonight, like truly. But to see us go right into the discussion about signs and not hold that same basis. And so, it's like, I'll read that for you. all persons may speak, write, and publish freely. And so that's just interpreted as freedom of expression. And so when we say that we're not going to do any limitations on murals, and then we go to signs and we say, well, we're going to do this certain limitation, the argument just doesn't flow. And I don't seem like I'm not willing to compromise, but I won't compromise on the First Amendment. I can't. And so that's just all I wanted to point out there. And like think about maybe like a book. We don't limit the number of pages that an author can write in a book. We don't limit that mural. We don't limit these signs that are expression. So that's all. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for opening that up.
No problem.
I did have a couple more things.
Sure.
We're not closing this part yet.
Because this is probably our very last meeting. If everything goes accordingly, we will not reconvene, so this may be our final adjournment.
You don't think they're going to send it back?
I hope they don't send it back, but we'll see. So, Deb, please.
These are real high charts, the things I have here, but back to the native species and the ornamental grasses, we got to use clumping. Because if you just put ornamental grasses, you can have ribbon grass that you could say it's not invasive, but it will be. You know, if you say clumping, you know it's just going to stick in a clump just for the grasses.
So, I'm not following. What is the recommendation?
It says native species equals something. It didn't make sense.
That was from your comment from the last meeting.
I know. Native species shall mean non-invasive.
Ornamentals, yeah.
Yeah, ornamental. But I just want to get to just the grasses. Because you got to get the clumping done. Otherwise, they become invasive. And people don't know it. They think it's decorative. So you got to add the clumping just for the grasses.
So
to keep them from spreading where they shouldn't be.
So what's the specific regulation? What do you...
Well, we were talking about...
No, I mean, what's the language that you want to add?
Just clumping.
So a specific
non-invasive
type.
Clumping ornamental grass.
Oh, so just add the word clumping.
Yeah.
In between, okay.
Yeah.
All right, is everybody okay with that?
I need to understand, and I think in general, clumping needs to have a definition or understanding, because
I think that's
what
the master gardeners call it.
Well, but if you go to our local resources, you know, Midwest Ground Covers, who is the premier provider of, you know, grasses and ornamentals for our region, if you go to Michael Durr and you start looking at, you know, the woodies, there's the herbaceous version, you know, from Michael Durr being the woody species, herbaceous species, clumping gets into
grass.
What's that?
Grasses.
Well,
ornamental grasses.
So it's ornamental grasses. That's what we are talking about. That's how,
yeah,
if I look
not
in here.
A bush is woody.
Because native species, that's what we didn't want to do, is we didn't want to limit it to just native species of
right.
grasses, because
right.
we have three.
They grow in a clump too, but then there's no variety. That's why we went to the ornamentals.
Right, and so the ornamentals, because then you're going to get your upright. That,
yes.
If you say clumping, you preclude Pennisetum
right.
and a lot of the other materials.
So, I agree with Chris. We're trying to keep it in a way that there's a variety. We also have a professional landscape architect that reviews all landscaping plans. So they have more flexibility in recommending certain things than the code, which you want to be able to allow for a variety of opportunities. So if we get too in the weeds, not pun intended, we may harm, you know, landscaping opportunities for different developments.
Well, I'm kind of addressing, like, the signs. You know, you want grasses by a sign, but you don't want a grass that's ornamental that could spread, like a ribbon grass. Because they may not know what it is.
But that's why we have a professional
review. And they would
look
at the landscape plan for a sign, for the types.
No, our ordinance... We have prohibited plants. We don't have permitted plants. So that's up to, So Deb, say you do a, you know, you convert your house to a business, you got a sign out there. You as a homeowner could do a planting plan, put it in. Our landscape architect, you know, is going to review that and maybe make comments. Big development.
Varieties.
Yeah,
yes,
of the...
They do all of that.
Yes.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about...
No, right. You do not. It's
because
not, I'm not reviewing it.
Like, if a big development comes in, though, it's going to be done by a bigger firm, probably a landscape architect will prepare it, and then you have a second landscape architect on our side reviewing it. So what you're concerned about, there are checks and balances to make sure.
What I was concerned with was with guidance,
mm-hmm.
when somebody read the ordinance.
Yeah, and I think what...
Staff will handle
these
it.
Are minimum standards,
yes.
And then when they submit, and Dave can tell you... We do a full review of landscaping that goes well beyond what the ordinance minimum standards are to
okay.
encourage
right.
appropriate development.
Good.
Yeah.
So I don't have to worry about that. And then dead tree replacements. Like if a big tree dies, are they required to put in 12 trees?
You're talking about the tree replacement.
Yeah.
If a tree dies, no, we don't have a replacement for it.
We do not have
trees.
It's okay. Only if it's removed.
So if you have a development,
right.
Yes, then we're going to have them replace it.
And then smaller parkways, I know you said they can be reduced, but then there's, I don't know what page this is on, but then there's a part C, they can be located on private property instead of the parkway.
Oh, trees.
Yeah, I think if you're reducing a parkway to 5 feet, that might be a better option for the developer to have. I don't know if it goes in the yard or if it, like a...
Right, and that'll be something that's reviewed by staff.
And engineering.
And
so
engineering.
They only have a percentage that they can put on private property. So they can't put all trees on private property. So we would go through that with the landscape architecture, with engineering, public works, and work through that design.
I just want to make sure there's enough space in that
mm-hmm.
tree to survive.
Yeah.
The professionals
yeah.
make
but
sure that
5 feet isn't very much.
No, it's not. Not for instance.
You know, it works in the beginning when they're 2.5 inches.
Correct.
When they get bigger, forget it.
Yeah. And there was, we did discuss that, just, you know,
yeah,
engineer or public works.
Mm-hmm.
Public works is actually advocating to have all parkway trees on
private
the private property.
Yeah.
But we had the discussion of it's very beneficial to have them as close to the street
right.
as possible for
because
heat.
Because it shades the street.
Exactly.
You know.
Reduces that
and
heat.
It doesn't burn up, the grass doesn't burn up in the parkways. There is an advantage.
Yeah.
But you got to have enough space.
There's got to be enough space.
Just like in the islands in the parking lot.
Yep, you're right. And?
I guess that's it for me. Finally. Last question.
Dave?
Maybe.
Dan?
Good. I don't know anything about ground cover except mulch and hostas, so.
Okay. With that, thank you very much, everybody. And we'll move this on now. So we can adjourn at 8:39.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.